Linoleum Knife,
a podcast of the cinema.
I almost forgot the second word of the name of the show because we've been doing like all the Patreon shows, and they all have slightly different names.
True.
And then I was like, is this Linoleum Knights? Where am I?
The days do blur together right now.
Currently, they do not for me.
Oh, really?
They do not.
Because last week you totally gaslit me into thinking that Tuesday was Wednesday.
I was still sick then.
Okay, fine. Oh, now that you're better, it's lookout
I'm
world.
I'm great okay. again. Right. And I, for two solid days now in a row, I have woked up in the morning with no coughing at all.
Nice.
And so I'm the picture of super health.
Rosy health.
And micronutrients.
We should note, by the way, A, you're Dave White and I'm Alonzo Duralde.
Oh, that's right.
And B, you did not have like the big bad.
I didn't have the thing. I had a sinus infection, but it wasn't good. It was like one of the worst ones I've ever had.
Yeah.
But means I may have had the thing. Who knows?
you saw an actual doctor.
I saw a doctor who just told me it was sinusitis, and I never had a fever, so
yeah. Anyway, and you never lost your appetite, so
that is correct.
To the contrary. So anyway, it just means we started quarantining early. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, everybody.
We did start earlier than a lot of people. A lot of people started like last week.
Yeah,
and we've been here since the 6th.
Yep,
and we've left the house twice. Once to go to the grocery store, once to go to the post office. You went one direction, I went the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we Silkwood showered.
Right. We maintained distance.
You know how good I am now at not touching my face?
Good for you.
I mean, obviously, after I've, you know, thoroughly washed every square millimeter of myself, I luxuriously
touch.
Okay. We just talked about was it Madeline? Yeah.
Yes.
We were on Press Play
on KCRW
with Madeline Brand on KCRW on Friday.
Yes.
But we were doing it via Skype.
Yeah.
And I talked about that movie In My Skin.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. When you went down the road, I was like, oh, boy.
Which we will be bringing up again while we talk about Swallow. But as I thought about In My Skin, I was like, oh, that's what it is to touch my face right now. I'm having this erotic relationship with myself where I'm just like, oh.
Well, you know,
my fat face feels so...
It is the draw...
Voluptuous.
The draw of
good.
The forbidden. The taboo.
And my face has so much character and so much surface detail. so many little divots and scars and, you know, Shrek-like items. That when I touch my face, I'm like, ooh.
It's telling me a story.
Yeah.
Boy.
I would like to tell you a story right now about one of our friends. This just happened on...
Do you have permission to share this with the world?
The group text. I'm not going to say names.
Okay, fine.
We have a friend who works at a grocery store.
Hero.
And is a checkout person.
Yes.
And he said... this is so good. Yesterday, a lady screamed at me about a $2 birthday candle.
Oh, boy. Because that's the priority right now. Do not scream at your grocery people. They are literally at the front line of dealing with all kinds of stuff.
I told her to take the candle and get the F out.
Wow.
And of course, the response, our response was, did you really say exactly that? And he goes, yes, I did. I was flustered. Managers weren't there. And she just left with the candle. Like, she just looked at me like, ugh, and left with the candle. Like, she knew she had been bad.
I know. What? That's, mm.
Well, I told him, I texted him and I said, I'm going to bake you a cake just for this. And I'm going to write on it, get the F out.
Who? I'm trying to imagine, like, what is so pressing right now that a birthday candle is the
you
thing
you ain't need
flip
to be having
over.
No birthday party anyway.
No,
first
I mean,
all,
like, maybe
you can postpone that birthday
if you're
party.
Having it on Zoom or something. But I mean, like,
and
you
who's
know,
gonna eat that cake?
Live without the
you
candle.
You're the one that gets the cake if you make that cake and have a Zoom birthday party.
Yeah, it's all you. True, but seriously, when you go to the grocery store, because at some point or other you're gonna have to go in there and restock or whatever.
Don't go to a store that doesn't. Use safe practices.
Yes. Make sure you go to one where they only let a
go
certain...
Go and scream at them about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will go to the ones where they only let a certain number of people in at a time so that you can all maintain your distance. But the people who are working there, be nice
treat
to
them,
the grocery store
yeah,
people.
Treat them like gods.
Be nice yeah. to the healthcare workers. Be nice to the people who have to go to work every day and deal with this stuff while the rest of us are staying at home and trying to flatten the curve. Because they're seeing it all, and they mm-hmm. could use some kindness.
I never want to go in one again. Honestly.
Oh, I went to the grocery store this week.
Me out.
It was the highlight of my week. It was the one time I got to leave the house. And, you know, the whole walk there, there weren't a ton of people on the street, but we were all being very good about, like, you know...
Keeping away. Yeah.
And then I got to the store, and I had to line up, and we were all distanced in the line. And then, you know, I got there, and, like, if some lady was dawdling over the chicken parts, and I was waiting to get there, I kept my distance and waited my turn, and...
I gotta tell you something. Having that chicken, uh-huh. like, the first meat we'd eaten in about, like, 9 days... Mm-hmm. What a treat that was. Feels like World War II. Like
it's true, yeah.
Because this is Monday morning, March 23rd, and we
2020.
We did not record this show yesterday like we usually do. We were a day late. So you didn't get to hear me talk about the glorious homemade chicken pot pie I made. And... I didn't think it was going to turn out all that right because I didn't have the herbs I wanted. You know, I didn't have any time. And I didn't have chicken stock. I just had vegetable stock. And I didn't have good carrots. I had frozen carrots. And
you know. I could have looked for time at the grocery store. You didn't put it on
but
my
I
list.
Didn't think about that.
I see.
I didn't think about that. I just knew that you were getting sick of not having any meat. And so, because I'm better at going longer stretches of time without meat than you are.
Mm. Yeah, our stores of beans and grains.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, that's right.
Well stocked.
We are. Listen, this is the way of the future. This is the meat is going to be. If we don't ever become vegetarians or who knows vegans,
no.
Meat should only be like
a sometimes
a sometimes treat, like even less so than a cookie.
Okay.
I think so. Ooh, you know what you need to make? I tell you what you need to make. That Ina Garten recipe for the cookies.
Oh, those did look good.
Yeah. You need to get on that.
Those are like salty chocolate chip oatmeal cookies?
Once you help me finish up cleaning the kitchen today,
you can
make yourself useful in a culinary way.
You've been a very... I'll tell you, y'all... If you ever need another reason to marry somebody who cooks, times like this... They come in real handy.
I bought the ingredients for another raspberry ricotta cake.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going to make one for Bibbs and Michelle. I was going to take it over to their house.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, because of friendship.
To be neighborly.
Just to be your friendships. And
even though they live on the other side of town, to be neighborly.
They don't live on the other side of town. They just live on the west side.
Yes.
The farther west side than we already live on.
Right. Yeah.
And, but then I couldn't do it, you know, because all this stuff. And I had these ingredients, and I was like, oh, man, if I don't use up that ricotta cheese, it's just going to grow mold and go bad. Mm-hmm. And I've got these frozen raspberries, and I bought this like a month ago. And so I did it. And that was such a relief to have that after the other night meal of the vegan sausages.
Which you had just bought and put in the freezer a while ago?
I just bought it and put in the freezer. Well, you know, because we have vegetarian and vegan friends that come over and they want, you know.
You got to feed them something.
You got to feed them something. And so, like, and I keep trying to find a good vegetarian / vegan sausage that doesn't taste like a hot dog that's made of dust.
Well, keep looking. This was like a cardboard hot dog.
I've tried field roast, which is fine. This was the Tofurky brand.
Yeah.
Which was fine. Mm. But boy, howdy, lots of mustard and ketchup on that hot dog made of dust. Hey. But it was good. Like, it was that and some pureed squash that I had pulled out of the freezer. Like, I'm pulling all the things out of the freezer.
Right.
And things that are just spare weird things in the pantry, I'm like using that up. and that's been like floating us for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so when I, we'll get to the movies in a minute. You don't care.
And if you want more food conversation, you should check out our Patreon page. We have a whole show about this every week called Linoleum Knife and Fork.
It was so good to, after suffering through that vegan sausage, to have that cake waiting for us. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even, like, there's no more polite behavior going on. Like, that cake was cut into 4 pieces.
Yes.
I had one giant piece, you had one giant piece, and then the next morning for breakfast, we had the other two giant pieces. Cake gone.
Yes.
Worth it.
Totally. No regrets.
Yeah. It's an entree. It's a dinner entree. It's a breakfast entree.
But my thought is I want to take that recipe. Mm. I want to put big like chocolate chunks into it.
I think that would be very nice.
And then do them as muffins.
As like cupcakey muffins.
Yeah.
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 I think
We also saw movies.
They're streaming.
Yes.
Y'all, movies are streaming now.
It's amazing.
They're not in movie theaters.
It's a whole at all.
Anymore.
Yeah. So everything we're talking about this week, you can be watching at home, either as part of something you're already subscribed to or for purchase.
Where is Swallow? Because I still have In My Skin on my head.
Swallow is for purchase.
Where?
So iTunes, Amazon.
How much did it cost you to...
We got a link.
Oh, we got a review link?
Yes.
We're the media. That's why. How much do you know how much it costs?
I don't.
But like probably like a normal amount.
Yeah, like
under $10.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Because we'll get to that in a minute. Okay. I'm a little righteously indignant
about
the cost of some certain things that are taking place. I'm right.
All right. We'll see. Anyway, Swallow.
Carlo Mirabella Davis.
Yes.
Is the writer and director of this film. Yes, I don't know this person.
This is like his second feature.
Okay.
I don't really know his stuff either.
Hang on. I'm IMDb-ing him right now. And this is his second full-length film. The first was a documentary that he co-directed called The Swell Season.
Hmm.
But he's directed some shorts.
Okay.
As well.
Well, it stars Haley Bennett.
Yeah.
As a young woman who has married into a wealthy family. And her in-laws have given her and her husband this beautiful glass box house.
And
on a body of water.
It's shorthand for bad things are going to happen in this house.
Yeah, if you watch Tom Anderson's Los Angeles Plays Itself, he talks about how whenever you see modernist architecture in a movie, that it's always the lair of the villain.
Right. She is not the villain.
No.
And technically speaking, there isn't a true villain in this film, but there are...
That family's pretty terrible.
There is a husband, a father-in-law, and a mother-in-law, all of whom are rotten.
Yes.
Yeah.
She spends her days, you know, trying to, like, fix up the house. She gets pregnant.
It looks like something out of Dwell. Y'all remember Dwell magazine?
Right.
I don't even know if it still exists or not.
But yeah.
Like, it's that perfect house.
Right.
And she somehow does that thing, like an old 50s sitcom, where she's completely dressed in very stylish
crinolines,
like skirts and blouses and heels and stuff. And she's, you know,
vacuuming,
heaving a vacuum across the floor like Kim Basinger in that Burning Plane movie.
Anyway, so, you know, she gets pregnant but it's very clear that the family is like, she has no agency, basically.
Zero amounts of that. Yeah.
People don't listen to her stories. People are...
They interrupt her and just start talking about other things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she wasn't even there, yeah.
And so, you know, as a way to sort of maintain some level of control, she starts swallowing household objects.
Tiny little household objects of increasing...
Danger.
Yeah. Like, first it's a marble and you're like, okay, I guess, you know... It'll come out the other end, but it does,
and she retrieves it and puts it in this little, you know,
like a trophy case,
little glassy mirror area on her vanity stand, and then like you see that area start getting full of things like thumbtacks and double A
batteries.
And it's just like, ugh.
Eventually she needs to have her stomach pumped.
Yes,
she's also pregnant. Did you say that already? Pregnant.
Yes, I did.
Her husband, Austin Stowell, that's the actor's name.
Yeah, he's been in Fantasy Island.
He's been in a bunch of stuff from the time he was a child. Like he was in those Dolphin Tale movies. I don't know if you ever saw those or not. But
is that the one where they make the prosthetic fin?
I forget.
Like it's Harry Connick Jr. making a fin.
That might be what those were. Like with Ashley Judd, and I just looked up on IMDb, and that is exactly what that is.
Okay, did not see those.
They put the fake tail on the dolphin, and then the dolphin does.
It can swim again.
Things, I don't know. I can't remember. Those movies were fine. Yeah. So then stuff starts to get a little wilder.
Yeah.
And plot-wise, everything up until the end of Act 2-ish revolves around this woman's struggle to maintain control of her body and then, by extension, her life.
Right.
Act 3 shifts gears in an unexpected and narratively strange way.
Yeah,
you didn't care for, well, and that I disliked less.
There's a couple things going on in Act 3.
Yeah.
One of which I think sort of takes us outside of the immediate bubble of these four people, basically.
Yeah.
Five, if you include her therapist.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that. It really wasn't until we get to a point where, like, okay, it's time to explain everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what sort of let me down, because I think that, you know, I think these movies operate best. Like, you know, we talked a lot about how much this movie is borrowing from Todd Haynes' Safe.
I wouldn't know that.
It's influenced.
It is influenced by Todd Haynes' Safe specifically. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But
yeah. But Safe never, like, tells you,
oh no,
is this really happening to her? Yeah. Is she really afflicted by this? Or is this her way of, you know, maintaining her psyche and, you know, like lashing out or whatever,
right?
You know, but this movie isn't going to let you out of the theater without like nailing it all down and telling you what to feel about things. And so that I was a little disappointed by, because up until that point, I liked the, you know, how we're in her head and she doesn't know what's going on exactly. She can't quite nail why it is she's doing what she's doing,
right.
But we're given clues along the way. She tells the therapist certain things that matter. You know, and I was, and like we said on Madeline, I think if this, like, if this were a European film, I think they would allow us to, like, live with the uncertainty and figure it out for ourselves.
European and, or Todd Haynes.
Or Todd Haynes, exactly. And this movie is not doing that.
I agree with you about that third act stuff. And I also kind of forgive it a little for some reasons.
It does, at least all of this stuff is happening in a scene with Dennis O'Hare that's really good, and yeah, he's really good.
First of all, the debt it owes to Safe did not bother me at all. In terms of the filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
He's you know, he's picked up the good points from Safe, like, mm-hmm, the framing of her, you know, compositions where she is, like,
swallowed
the
up,
tiniest thing in the frame, you know, like, and this gorgeous oppressive stuff all around her.
Mm-hmm.
The performances are really good.
Yeah,
kind of across the board. Elizabeth Marvel as, yes, the mother-in-law,
and David Rich.
She's diabolical. Austin Stowell is a typically sort of oblivious hot guy husband who you don't even understand why they got married, other than they're both attractive.
Yeah, it's purely externals. You know?
Yeah.
He's a very good alpha a-hole.
Haley Bennett is terrific,
yes,
here from start to finish, and she's like the executive producer.
Yes.
I think as well. So it's a film that's worth, I think, looking at, but ultimately there are things that are nagging at me,
yes,
about it that keep me from liking it as much as I wanted to like.
Yeah, I still recommend the movie. I think it's worth seeing for the way it's shot, those performances you mentioned that are really good, you know, Dennis O'Hare included.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a little, it goes so well for so long that it's just like, oh, you didn't quite cross the finish line, but there's still a lot to like.
A film like Safe, sort of low level throbs with this sense of dread that, mm-hmm, doesn't allow you much of a resolution.
Right.
And then there's this, again, the film I referenced earlier called In My Skin.
Mm-hmm.
Early 2000s, from a filmmaker, a French filmmaker, a woman named Marina Devan.
François Ozon, like, produced it, right?
He may have. It gets lumped in with that sort of French extremity horror, although it's not a horror film. Mm-hmm. It's this psychological drama about a woman who accidentally injures herself it's like a piece of rebar or something in a backyard at a friend's party. Like, it's sticking out of the ground and she's, mm-hmm, it kind of gouges into her, you know, shin. Mm-hmm. She goes to the doctor and they fix it up and everything, but she becomes obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
She becomes obsessed with the wound itself. And as she becomes more obsessed with it, she becomes erotically fixated on it, mm, as well. And I won't tell you what happens in this movie because, A, it's unnerving and bad, but it's so relentless in its commitment to taking everything that you could possibly think might happen in a situation like this,
mm-hmm,
all the way to the wall, that when it's over, you're like,
It sounds Cronenberg-y, isn't it?
It is, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the kind of film I can't recommend to a lot of people because a lot of people would be like, oh, you love that, do you?
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dave. I especially don't recommend it right now.
Yeah.
Because everything's so awful right now outside of the walls of your home.
And I imagine her obsession is a lot about staying at home by herself. And
kind of. Like, at one point she checks herself into a fancy hotel, mm, to spend time with herself and her wound.
Okay.
It's. I also need to tell you, it's very gross as well. But like, currently, me personally, I know, like, just recently you had to watch Contagion for Breakfast All Day.
Yes.
Like, your Patreon people voted that you guys had to watch Contagion and then talk about it.
Yep.
I'll tell you what. That, no. No. Recently, in the past 2 weeks, all I have given a damn about when it's time to sit down, think about nothing, look at something on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I want to watch, like,
Footlight Serenade.
Oklahoma. I want to watch Footlight Serenade. No, sorry, not Footlight Serenade. Footlight Parade.
Footlight Parade. Oh, sorry.
We did watch on the Criterion Channel Footlight Parade. Is it my streaming recommendation of the week? It's hard to say if I could recommend it. I mean, I can and I can't. I'm just going to digress into this for a moment.
Okay.
It is a film that stars James Cagney, Joan Blondell, Ruby Keeler, and a bunch of...
Dick Powell,
a bunch of other folks.
Frank McHugh.
And they're... God. I think this may have been my first Frank McHugh experience.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
And... Boy, howdy. What a treat that dude is.
We had character actors then.
What a wonderful treat that man is in a film. And I'm not talking about, oh, he's so hot or whatever. I'm talking about, like, his presence in this film. Every time he's doing his thing, you're, like, laughing and, like, loving him.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just a movie about show people.
Yes.
And how terrible they are. and it's, first of all, it's frantic.
Yeah.
It's about an hour and 45 minutes, and you're tired by the time it's over.
Yeah, it's a sprint.
It's a 1933 movie, and it never stops moving. People talk a mile a minute. They're always yelling at each other. They're always trying to get one over on each other. They're always like... goading each other into something terrible or threatening each other with something terrible. And in the middle of it are these like tap dancing numbers where people's bodies are just like flying around the screen.
Yeah. Busby Berkeley numbers.
Directed the musical numbers.
Yes. Lloyd Bacon did the film.
And when Busby Berkeley directs something, it's a Busby Berkeley movie.
You know it's a Busby Berkeley movie.
So the music.
Should we explain Busby Berkeley for younger?
You should. Please do it.
Okay. If you've ever seen, like, they periodically, like even Cats has a Busby Berkeley moment.
It does.
If you ever see, like, an overhead shot of all these dancers doing these kind of kaleidoscopic movements, or you see, you know, the line he used to always use was, you know, 100 girls playing 100 violins next to 100 waterfalls.
Right.
That kind of thing, that's Busby Berkeley.
A line of people dressed as bananas while Carmen Miranda is...
Yes, exactly. He invented this thing. And this is one of his earlier films, 1933, yeah, you know.
1933.
And he was already, like, doing what he was going to do.
And so, the grand finale of this movie...
Yes.
...are three back-to-back-to-back, three in a row Busby Berkeley numbers.
Production numbers.
Staggeringly extravagant.
Yes.
Just wild. That, like, defies, like, the ability of human beings to do something like that in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're all allegedly taking...
Taking place on stages.
They're all supposedly taking place on stages, but they're clearly in these, like, enormous sound stages.
Right.
Where, you know, because... And obviously, you know...
Synchronized swimming and waterfalls are happening. And, you
like,
know, yeah.
And an audience in a theater would never be able to see the overhead shot that you're always getting of the kaleidoscope stuff.
Right.
So it's like, you just have to kind of go with that.
You go with that. And they, all three of them are... astonishing.
Yes.
Particularly the waterfall.
Yes.
But it's 1933. So,
it's got what Disney Plus would call outdated cultural representations.
I don't know why, when I watch a film from the 30s or 40s or sometimes even the 50s,
mm-hmm. you're still surprised when this pops up?
I'm still freshly, oh, like, I'm still freshly stunned.
Yes.
Into, like, jaw slackness.
Yeah.
When performers in blackface show up. Or
B.B. Daniels plays Shanghai Lil.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the big number at the end. Now that we've all... Now, after you've already dealt with the fact that performers in blackface have shown up at various points in the film.
In the background, for the
In the background. Part. There's not a blackface number.
Yes. Which, at this era, there were plenty.
But what there is, the final number is... It's a black and white film. But it's what we would call yellow face.
Uh-huh.
So a bunch of white people pretending to be Asian mm-hmm. and wearing the hats and the
using the what they call pidgin English.
So you're watching the number and taking note of like all the ways in which it has influenced Amy Sherman Palladino's sense of choreography for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Right.
And then marveling at the technical, you know, achievement going on.
It's one of the rare numbers where he has like a bunch of dudes on stage, yes. all these soldiers in yeah. formation.
Yeah.
I think he's the original Vanessa Beecroft.
But you are, yes. Look it up, kids. Vanessa Beecroft. But then you're like, oh, but so much racism.
Take that wig off, B.B. Daniels.
So it's that evergreen problem.
It is the
problem.
the pill like, you have to swallow when you watch movies of a certain vintage.
If you are going to watch them at all.
Yeah, I mean,
it's up to you if you're going to
and you can opt not
deal
to,
with
certainly.
That. Yeah. But it by the time this happens usually in a film, I'm sort of like 70 minutes in and I'm like,
yeah.
Old-timey people. I mean, this movie is 87 years old.
Yes.
And that was what white people thought was fine
mm-hmm.
back
and,
then.
And not enough people were telling them it wasn't.
Well, if they were telling them, they weren't listening. And then yeah. then there was...
You not know, enough just... people with power were telling
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Anyway, I watched Footlight Parade. We both did.
It's a doozy.
It's quite a thing. So here's what you should do. Try to bleep over the blackface performers in the background.
Yes.
After the waterfall number, the movie's over.
There we go. Sure. Just skip the Shanghai Lil number. And... it's not like there's much plot happening at that point.
Yeah. You see anybody in blackface? Just fast forward. They're just walking behind in the background. Anyway.
Yeah, they are literal background in this movie. It's not like Holiday Inn where suddenly we stop
suddenly
and Bing Crosby is in blackface.
Bing Crosby's in blackface. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, stop it after the waterfall number, and then you're still watching a completely racist movie, but not all the way to the end.
Yes. That's a
I don't know.
Time. Well, if we're...
Decide for yourself.
If we're talking about... streaming selections, what the heck, beyond the new ones that we're talking
since
about
since we're completely
week.
Out of chronological order
sure
right now, anyway.
What the heck, nothing yeah. matters anymore. Somebody on Twitter was asking us for suggestions, you know, for different streaming services, and they mentioned Amazon Prime. So I was going through the list and digging up a bunch of titles, and then I remembered that a movie that I have loved in recent years was an Amazon release.
Yeah.
And not a lot of people saw it. It didn't get the awards of attention that I thought it should have.
Yes.
So what a better time to recommend once again to people that they check out Mike White's Brad's Status.
Oh, yeah. That's not bad. Brad's Status is not a bad
movie. I like that movie a whole lot. Ben Stiller plays a...
You were far more into it than I was, but I'm not going to hate
it. I think it's a great sort of white dude midlife crisis movie.
Speaking of more white people stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, he Ben Stiller plays a middle-aged dad. He's taking his son on college visits. And it's sort of, it's reminding him that, like, of his closest friends in college, they've all become a lot more successful. They're either famous or they're rich or both. And he is carrying around all these resentments, and basically over the course of the film, like, gets a series of talking to's where he needs to just, like, calm down. And
well, where he learns that the friends are not exactly what they are
exactly
presenting to the world.
Yes, and he gets a definite sort of, like, reality check from younger people who are about to graduate college and go into the world about what actually matters and what success looks like.
Yeah.
You know, Mike White wrote and directed it. It's one of my favorite Ben Stiller performances. I think it's really great. And I think a lot of people missed it. So it is streaming now on Amazon Prime, Brad's Status. Also streaming on Amazon Prime.
And this is a new one.
Is a new this one.
We're back to the new releases.
Yes, we are. Blow the Man Down, which premiered at Sundance, I think maybe last year, and is now streaming on Amazon. It's not a whodunit by any measure, but it is a, you know,
will they get away with it?
Yeah, kind of. I was jokingly referring to it as like a cross between Mystic Pizza and Fargo.
Initially, you said Blood Simple.
Which Blood Simple, you're right.
Which one would you choose?
Yeah, Blood Simple, actually, okay. Because it is about two people who, you know, like, suddenly find themselves in the position of having to, like, cover up a murder, and they're, like, they're in way over their heads. So these two sisters, you know, who are living in Maine, played by Sophie Lowe and Morgan Saylor, their mother has just died. And the death of the mother sort of opens up this kind of power vacuum in the town, because clearly...
And you don't understand why.
You're not quite sure why at first, but it becomes clear that, like, this circle of women is really running the show there.
Right.
And so, like, the mother's closest friends are played by Annette O'Toole, June Squibb, and Marceline Hugo. But they now want to shut down the local bordello.
What is the difference between a bordello and a brothel? And what you said,
a house of ill repute.
The other day on the radio, you're like, it's a house of ill repute. Well, and I'm like,
it's NPR.
Okay, Margaret Dumont.
I wasn't sure what I was supposed to say. I think they're all synonyms as far as I know.
Okay.
Anyway, she runs a whorehouse. Margot Martindale. And the other women are like, yeah, you need to knock it off. And Margot Martindale's like, no, we agreed on this years ago that this was how this was going to go. So that's sort of this underlying story to the whole thing. But the main plot regards the two sisters, one of whom kills a guy in self-defense, played by Eben Moss Bachrach from Girls. Uh-huh. And their attempts to hide the body and cover up the murder, and the complicating factor that he apparently worked for Margot Martindale, which draws her into this whole thing. It's got a really great sort of sense of place and character, and... I liked that. I really didn't know where this was going to go. You know, and I believe that everybody had been in this town their entire lives and sort of dealing with their stuff. It's two female filmmakers, writer directors, Bridget Savage Cole and Danielle Crudy. Who I believe just did a Switchblade Sisters episode.
Good for them. That totally scans and is appropriate.
Indeed.
I love that this movie was shot actually in its place.
Yeah.
Where it was set.
Right.
And where, you know, it's really winter.
Mm.
You're really seeing the breath. It's wet and cold and it's snow on the ground and it's a fishing, you know, port.
Yeah. There's a fisherman's chorus. It's like literally sort of the Greek chorus of the movie.
Yeah, and they're clearly like from some gay men's chorus or whatever, you know what I mean? Like they're really like robustly singing these, you know, sea shanties, and they're dressed like fishermen.
Great sweaters.
And the camera will just like throw to them every once in a while, like, here we still are, we're on the dock singing songs.
Sweaters, beautiful sweaters.
I really like this movie. It's clearly, you know, shot for 10 cents, but like atmosphere is like everything here, and the performances of everyone, the young women, the older women, are really great. You get a story that you have never heard of before. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. No one's ever told me a story about a small town with a brothel run by women that has been set up for a very specific reason.
Yes.
Now, I do have a question about it. What is this movie's attitude about sex work? What do you think?
I'm not sure that it has a take on sex work as much as it has about class. I think that the women who started the brothel were basically trying to protect themselves and their own children.
Right.
And if that meant the exploitation of other women,
so be it.
So be it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, does the movie think that's okay?
I think the movie...
It's a little ambiguous about how it really feels about
it. I think the movie wants us to kick that around. Because there's no clear, like, well, she's right and she's wrong. You know, I think, like, Margot Martindale makes a point, but I think June Squibb makes a point. I think unlike Swallow, this isn't a movie that then stops and tells you, you know, how you're supposed to feel about it. You are left with the ambiguity. You are left to kind of kick around. Well, okay, I see what she's saying, but then I also see what she's saying.
Right.
Those performances are great. I mean, Margot Martindale, I love her so much anyway, but she is relishing the nastier
being the madam
aspects of this character and doing a pretty serviceable main accent, I would say.
I like Annette O'Toole.
I love Annette O'Toole. I
quite a bit
always want more Annette O'Toole. Like, she pops up in things every so often, and I'm just like, oh, yes, more, please.
I recently learned that she is married to Michael
McKean.
I didn't know that.
They got an Oscar nomination for writing the song that... They got an Oscar nomination for writing the song that Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara sing in A Mighty Wind.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
When was I guess I wasn't paying attention.
I guess you weren't.
Why isn't Lewis here always to tell me the things that I need to know right away?
Annette O'Toole is my Twitter friend.
Oh, is she?
Yes.
Why? How did that happen?
I followed her for a long time, and then there was whatever the last thing I saw her in, I just sort of tweeted about, like, yes, more Annette O'Toole, please. And she, like, said something.
She followed you after you praised her?
I don't even know if she follows me, but she did respond to a thing I said once.
You don't know if she follows you or not?
I don't.
Well, then she's not your Twitter friend, is she?
Well, it's a one-sided friendship.
No. You are her follower. You're not her Twitter friend.
Okay, fine.
In terms of having famous people as Twitter friends, you have Nia Vardalos.
Yes. For a while, Eliza Dushku.
And did she unfollow you?
No, I don't know. Annette O'Toole is not following me.
Okay, well, then she's not your friend.
Fine.
No claims. Look, no claims to friendships.
She is my Twitter friend the way that the Shahs of Sunset are your TV friends.
Yes, but they've been behaving very, very badly lately. And I don't know if this friendship can continue.
More about that on LKTV.
They have been my imaginary friends for a while. But boy howdy, they're not being nice. Like, and I know that's their job.
Right.
But they've been really not being nice. We'll talk about it on OKTV.
Exactly.
Blow the Man Down.
Yeah.
And Swallow. as I told a friend the other day what films we were going to be talking about this week, the friend said, are these the titles of real movies?
Or they are not porn.
Or are you on Pornhub right now? what was the other one we watched? Big Time Adolescence.
Big Time Adolescence, yes. Why don't you describe this one?
So Big Time Adolescence is on Hulu?
It is.
Right now? Was it always going to go to Hulu?
Yes. Think?
Okay.
Yes. It was
was going to be theatrical?
No, Swallow was day and date, which it was.
Okay.
Because it's been, it opened that last weekend that there was sort of a
so it did open office. In theaters?
It did.
All right.
Okay. And Big Time Adolescence was always announced as like theatrical Hulu, you know.
So. Okay. And then...
Blow the Man Down was always going to be an Amazon original.
I understand. But it was at Sundance first.
Yes.
Okay. Jason Ordley is the filmmaker. I don't know him. I think he's new. And the only thing he's directed other than this is the Pete Davidson stand-up special that's happening on Netflix right now.
Oh, okay.
Which we did watch.
Yeah.
This stars child actor Griffin Gluck,
mm-hmm.
who's been in things.
Yeah, he was in like Netflix's Tall Girl and Netflix's Lock and Key and a lot of different... And Netflix's American Vandal. Well, okay, so he really gets around.
And he's a kid who the film begins, he's nine, he's played by another kid
yeah.
when he's nine. Pete Davidson is his older sister's boyfriend.
Yes.
But they break up very quickly after sort of, you know, after Pete Davidson and the kid sort of bond as, you know,
buddies.
Big bro, little bro kind of buddies.
So even after the breakup, they continue to hang out.
They continue to hang out. But Pete Davidson is the Matthew McConaughey character from Dazed and Confused, only not fun.
Well, he doesn't hit on high school girls, but he's definitely he's arrested.
There's a breeziness to the Matthew McConaughey character. There's a 70s sort of like
casual.
Didn't we all love that kind of casual dude who just kept on hanging out, you know?
Right.
This is not that guy. This is a guy who's now 23 but keeps just hanging out.
Yeah.
Getting high all the time. Quitting his job just because he doesn't feel like working, and being a bad influence on the kid.
Yes.
To the point where he eventually corrals the kid into helping him sell drugs to high schoolers.
Yeah.
And it goes from there. The parents of the kid, John Cryer, and who's the mom? I don't know.
Julia Murney.
Okay. They are increasingly upset, but they don't know what to do about it until finally things come to a head and the kid gets arrested for selling drugs. That's not a spoiler because it happens at the very beginning of the movie and then yeah. the whole rest of the movie is told in flashback. And this is how I got here. This is how this all happened, you know. Unlike coming-of-age films that are sort of wistful about that time in life.
Mm.
And again, unlike a film like Dazed and Confused, this is a not coming of age film. This is a...
Avoiding maturity.
You didn't come of age. Yeah. You stuck around and just became a bigger and bigger dirtbag.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this pervasive sadness throughout.
Yeah.
It's marginally a comedy. I mean, like, Pete Davidson is funny. Mm-hmm. Because Pete Davidson is funny.
Right.
But the character is not, and you can feel that he is personally invested in this character, sort of giving it a lot of himself,
mm-hmm.
the parts of himself that he's trying to fight and leave behind as he gets older, because sure. he's, what, like 24, 25 now? He's not that old now.
Right.
He started SNL very, very... young. I think he was like 19 or something.
He will be 27 in November.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, he has very sort of publicly talked about his own struggles with
yes.
substance and depression mm-hmm. and all sorts of stuff. He puts himself in rehab from time to time, I yeah. know. So he's working on it, and you can feel this character as a bit of an extension of him. You know, trying to get his life sorted out.
Yeah, I think there is a resonance that another actor might not have brought to the material, partially not from having had those experiences and partially not from our being privy to those experiences as they were happening. So I think a lot of what works in that role is not just what Pete Davidson knows about himself, but what we know about Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie is, there's a lot about it that I like, but I think that tonally it never quite settles on anything. Like,
yeah.
Is this a cautionary tale? Is this a tragedy? Is this a comedy? Like, it's a little of everything and a lot of nothing, ultimately, in terms of, you know, it kind of becomes, It almost winds up feeling didactic, but it's telling us something, nothing that we don't know. It's like, yeah, obviously, if you're 23, you shouldn't be hanging around with a 17-year-old, and, like, you should have your act together and, like, you know, trying to have a real job and not just getting high all the time.
Yeah.
Also, if you're a 17 or a 16-year-old, you should not be hanging around with a 23-year-old who doesn't think we get stoned all day.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, message received movie, what else you got?
Yeah.
You know?
I found it, you know, unsatisfying, engaging. I watched it all the way through, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't wandering off in my brain, but I wanted something more. The kid, unfortunately, sort of seems almost to take a back seat, and he's the main character, ostensibly.
He's kind of a blank, yeah.
And so I wish there had been, honestly, the whole time I was just thinking about John Cryer and thinking, well, that's me. Be like the dad who's like, I'm gonna punch you in the face, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the frustrated parent. Those are the people I identified with.
And it's, you know, Bibbs reviewed this at The Wrap for me, and he talked about how the casting of Cryer is interesting if you look at, like, characters that he played in stuff like Hiding Out or whatever, you know.
Right.
That, you know, it's sort of like an older version of kind of the Pete Davidson character in a way. Yeah, like, I think if they had just made this movie about Pete Davidson and about him getting his act together, that might have been more interesting. But the relationship with him and the kid, you sort of figure out very quickly, well, this is dumb. This is
unsustainable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, big time adolescence. If you've got Hulu, it's free.
Yeah.
Or if you have a friend's Hulu password, it's free.
Sitting right there waiting for you.
How much did The Hunt cost to rent?
$20.
Good God.
And I'm nothing that you say.
State your case.
Nothing that you say about your objections to it are wrong, because that's a lot.
I'm right.
I'm gonna say this is the shred of corporate explainability of, because Universal put out Emma, The Invisible Man, and The Hunt all on streaming, all for $20 each.
Yep.
And like Paramount is about to do that on Tuesday or tomorrow with The Way Back.
Okay.
Lionsgate is doing, I Still Believe. Those were kind of the last movies to sort of like almost dip their toe into theaters. And, yeah. Oh yeah, and then Universal is going quote unquote day and date on, Trolls World Tour.
Okay.
We'll see if there's any theaters left
Onward is...
Onward is already streaming. Yeah. I don't know for how much, and then it's coming to Disney Plus earlier than expected.
Okay.
There's this paradigm shift happening now where, like, you know, streaming is becoming the thing. So I get why Universal is charging this much, because the way that their structure was set up for these movies was to get a certain amount out of, you know, domestic box office or global box office, and then a certain amount for streaming. And if you're cutting that window, you can't kind of cut that window and then also like go to what usual streaming rental prices would be. I think that would be just too much of a shift. What I worry about, though, is that they're going to make enough on this process of doing it where they start thinking more and more, oh, well, then why don't we just either bypass theaters entirely or strong-arm theaters into accepting a much shorter theatrical window. Things that theater owners have been fighting for years. Like, do you remember that movie, Tower Heist?
Yes.
There was some plan where they were going to either try and day and date it, or they were going to shorten the window, and all these theaters refused to show it, and they were like, okay, yeah, fine, never mind, we blink, you know, and it, we went out as normal.
I remember Tower Heist because in the mail, as a promotional bit of swag, they sent us Tower Heist trading cards, like the old bubblegum trading cards, uh-huh, like a baseball card pack with a stick of gum in it and everything.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, great, now I have a Casey Affleck trading card.
Yippee. So anyway, I who knows where this is all going to play out, but I think that, like, we may now start seeing the dawn of first run upper, you know, like deluxe pricing streaming for new movies like this. It is worrisome, but I don't endorse it, but I get why they did it.
Here's the thing. It costs $18 to see a movie in Los Angeles, at the premium theaters.
Yes.
ArcLight, The Grove.
Even at a matinee.
Even at a matinee.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get a cheap ticket to a matinee at an AMC theater in Los Angeles, like $9 or something like that.
Yeah. And you can also join.
But folks who do not live in giant cities, who are not used to spending $20 for one ticket, they don't want to do this. They don't want to spend that.
Here's the thing. What's going to be interesting is that once the current crisis is over, there's nothing to stop you from having 10 friends over and have them each kick in $2.
I guess.
To watch a movie. Right now, you know, that's not happening, so it shouldn't be happening. So it is down to, you know, whoever's in your house.
Anyway, we spent $20 to watch The Hunt.
Yes, we did.
The Hunt is the film that was notoriously pulled from release
last fall
after right-wing people got upset about it over...
Even though they hadn't seen it.
Even though they hadn't seen it, and even though the movie isn't...
Anti-them.
Anti-right-wing people. Now that we've seen it, I know it's not anti-right-wing people. And now its theatrical release has been... decimated by the current health crisis. So,
this is a cursed film.
Here's what happens in The Hunt. And I will tell you just enough.
Okay.
I will not give away things. A group of people find themselves deposited into a big wide open field with a box. All of them have gag bars in their mouths that are locked with a padlock. They have to open the box because they have to open the box. And as they're opening the box, one of them, Emma
Roberts,
finds the key to all the padlocks. They all take off their padlocks. And inside the box is a pig wearing an outfit, which comes into play later, and I won't explain why.
And a bunch of weapons.
And a bunch of weapons, and they all grab weapons, and they have to, like, do something, except they don't know what they're supposed to do. They all begin running with the weapons. And as they begin running with the weapons, they begin getting picked off one by one by snipers.
Yes.
Ultimately, the film focuses then on one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It focuses on Betty Gilpin from Glow and other stuff. And she plays a character named Crystal. And Crystal, it turns out, is the most competent, tough, final girl.
Yes,
that you will
exceedingly capable.
That you will see in this or any other movie of recent release. And she has to figure out why she's there, who's doing it, why they're doing it, and how to get out alive.
Yeah.
And that is The Hunt. And I haven't spoiled anything.
I think we can say that... Oh, fine, I won't.
Here's one more thing we can say. The people who are being hunted are the right-wing, like, rednecks, conspiracy theorists, anti-government...
Climate denialists.
Bigots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Trump people.
Right.
Okay.
But the people hunting them are...
rich, super liberal,
woke,
elite types.
Yes. Okay. So no one comes out well here.
You're right. But I'm going to say this in a way that doesn't give things away. When we finally learn what the point is of this, it is a point that I have seen made in a better...
Oh, no question.
In a better way, in a better place, and I can't even tell you where that better place is because that would give it all away.
I will say this.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if the movie has a broad point...
Yeah.
It is, and this is a phrase that I've heard used a lot, but not nearly enough because I think people don't get the message. The political spectrum does not go from left to right. It goes from top to bottom.
Yes.
You know, and so it's about, you know, wealth and class and, you know, access to education and all that kind of stuff.
But I'm going to tell you what I don't like.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about what's good.
Okay.
What I don't like is this corny ass script, because yeah.
Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof.
The dialogue of the, well, of the everyone.
Yeah.
Is basically at the same level of the first episode of the reboot of Roseanne.
It's like when, it's like Rod Serling at his most didactic.
Yeah. And I was shocked by that, because as it kept going, I thought, okay, there's going to be another shoe drop here, because this clearly can't be
what we're actually getting.
This can't be the plodding, dumb morality play that I'm seeing happen. But then it turns out that it's a plodding, dumb morality play.
Yes.
And it is full of someone's idea of what a sophisticated, progressive thinking person is. But it's not like anyone I know. And
it's also full of ideas about
what a right-wing person is, exactly. As well. It's irritating. It just kept bothering me, because it's so, like, it is exactly what it is.
Yes.
And you're thinking it's going to be smarter than that?
It is
then
not.
It's not.
And under all of this is an idea that I think is an interesting one and a valuable one about trolling and about mutual distrust and about the impossibility of dialogue in the modern age and all that
right.
stuff that I so wish they had gone after in a smarter way.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't.
Here's what's great.
Betty Gilpin.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I don't think I know much about her.
I've seen her in some
until
stuff.
Until here. And if I have, I'll have to go to IMDb and find out what she's
You've seen her in things like Isn't It Romantic and Stuber. Like movies that you've mostly forgot you ever saw.
Stuber.
But she was interesting.
Isn't It Romantic? What was that?
The one with Rebel Wilson, where she hits her head and she's in the rom-com universe.
Oh, God.
And Betty Gilpin, I think, played like the evil office coworker who's really funny and like makes an impression because she's Betty Gilpin.
Yeah. She's giving a performance that this film does not deserve.
Yeah.
That if this weren't a blood and guts thriller, somewhere down the road at the end of the year, award-giving people would be like, oh, yeah, her.
Right.
Like, look what she did. And because the film gets less and less worthy of her, and she just keeps being great.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, she begins making weird noises, and you're wondering why, and you're like, oh, no, this is just, like, a person who's at her wit's end.
Yeah.
And she's coming apart, but she has to hang on or die. She's
keeping it all together, yeah.
She's fantastic.
There is also a mano-a-mano fight at the end of the film involving Betty Gilpin and Hilary Swank.
Yes.
That is like Russ Meyer level. Like, just no holds barred.
Yes.
Two women letting each other have it.
Right. So that's fantastic. That fight scene in the final bit is fantastic. And Betty Gilpin is fantastic. And here's what else is great. You never know what's coming.
There is that.
In spite of the idiotic dialogue that keeps oppressing you.
Mm-hmm.
The action in the film is constantly surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And they fill the cast with names. And then shocking things happen to those people. And you're not thinking that's going to happen. And
you're assuming the familiar faces are there to get you through the movie.
Nope. Mm-hmm. And so it's an exciting film to watch.
Yeah.
It's viscerally surprising and viscerally satisfying. But intellectually, it's just dead on.
I'll even give it this.
Yeah.
Like, the big twist that they offer is a smart one.
Yeah.
And is a potentially provocative one that in a better movie, they could have built more onto it.
Yeah.
But at least as an idea, it's like, oh, that's actually clever.
Yeah.
But then they don't fulfill it.
I'm bummed that it's not as smart as I wanted it to be.
No, agreed. No question.
But again, it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And it stays that way.
It just doesn't pay off the way you
right.
want it to.
So now we've also done already our streaming
picks. We've got some letters, though.
Oh, we do.
We do.
Please allow me to pull up those letters.
Won't you?
Here they are. They're in my
While you're doing that, I will email. Remind everyone that, hey, we have a Patreon page. And if you want more content from us in these times, we're happy to give it to you.
And look, by the way, let me just interrupt you just for a second. This is the free show.
Yes.
And a lot of you listening are also the Patreon people. If you're losing your job and you got to cut expenses, we get it. It's fine.
No hard feelings.
Nobody is going to be upset at you if you cut your subscription. We totally understand.
By the same token, several folks have upped their subscription or joined because
they've got time on their
hands. They have time on their hands, and we super appreciate that, and we will be bringing you all of that material.
We are also beefing up the content, too.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's so much to talk about, and so we're here in our apartment ready to talk about it.
Indeed we will.
So, you know.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check it out. See what you think. Yes. Maybe you'll join us.
Greg says, let me put my glasses on so I can read this. Dave, the rock music in Onward is more like 70s arena rock, Cheap Trick, Boston, Journey, Zeppelin, except not those actual bands, just guitar riffs and licks like them. Gives the movie a Freaks and Geeks vibe. I do know Magic by the Cars is in there.
That's true. Yeah. But the logos of the bands that he wears on his denim jacket.
Metallic looking.
Yeah.
That's, well, you know, everyone loves that. Mm-hmm. You know, who doesn't love a Celine Dion t-shirt that has her name in like
that
metal letters? Those are fantastic. You've seen those.
I have not.
What?
I have not seen the Celine Dion version.
They're amazing.
Oh, that's funny. I always love the one of the guy who took the picture of the car covered in kudzu.
Yeah.
It was like, the name of my new band.
Right. Kyle says, as someone who finally joined Patreon the day before being laid off, whoops, I just want to say now here's what I'm talking about, Kyle. Don't feel beholden. We'll be here. When everything's over, when the diseases are all contained and people get their jobs back and stuff, we'll still be here. Kyle continues, I just want to say how glad I am that you're back. Well, we were gone. We didn't podcast for like 12 days because we were both sick.
Yeah.
I started experiencing symptoms today after knowing I was exposed last week on a TV production, and there's nothing better to do than spend a few days in bed with catching up on your various uploads. Well, be well, Kyle.
Indeed.
And we don't mean that in the weird new passive-aggressive way that people are saying it.
Yes.
Like, stay well. Like, when they're trying to, like, insult you.
I don't know that it's necessarily.
Oh, it's already happening. It's already happening.
I'm not saying it can't be. I'm not saying it always is.
People talking to each other on Twitter, all mean and stuff, and then the final words are like, stay well.
Oh, ouch. That
oh, yeah. Seen. That's already happened. You always knew someone was going to weaponize this and figure out a way to make it petty.
Brother.
Yeah. Including one famous writer that, I'm not going to talk about her.
Boy.
This is from, I have to scroll all the way down, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a list?
Yes.
To be knifed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's also streaming.
Good day, gentlemen. I've been an avid listener for the past 5 years. I thoroughly enjoy your opinions and the focus on the hard-to-find features. I have also noticed the love you have for live-action Disney features. There have been many references in the podcast and online. Listen, this is a North Avenue Irregulars home.
Yes.
This is also a Super Dad home. Snowball Express.
Yes.
The Computer War Tennis Shoes home.
Original Freaky Friday.
It's a Freaky Friday home.
Yes.
Also, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
This is what we grew up on.
I watched many of these movies on 16mm film at my church.
Ah.
Also, between Donald Duck in Mathemagic Land and Toot Whistle Pluck and Boom on the early version of Disney Channel, there is some overlapping in the main actors as Disney used the same group. Mm. From Moochie, remember that kid?
Yes.
To the Disney Cary Grant, Dean Jones. and the incomparable Hayley Mills. This list in no particular order. The Parent Trap, 1961.
Ugh. I love
classic.
I love the 90s remake also, but yes, the 61 is delectable.
He says, I never understood the accents being the same when one was supposed to have been in the United States the entire time.
Good point.
Also, the amazing opening credit sequence with the dolls amazed me. Number two, the one and only genuine original family band.
Yes. Which is, here's a little trivia note.
Yeah.
The first collaboration between Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell.
Oh.
He plays one of the kids in the family, and she plays like a dancing girl in some like saloon or something.
This is a bad movie.
Yes.
This is a very bad movie. I remember going to see this in the theater with my mom.
Doesn't the election of Tyler play a big role in
Grover
this?
Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland, yes. Grover Cleveland versus Benjamin Harrison, yes. Yeah. Like, 'cause there's songs about both of them.
Candleshoe.
Oh, yeah.
Jodie Foster.
A cornerstone of lesbian cinema.
Oh, yeah. Snowball Express, which I think we just mentioned, right?
We did, yes.
He says, I always wanted a house that would slide down a mountain.
Who doesn't?
Escape to Witch Mountain.
I've still never seen either of the original Witch Mountains.
Well, I'll tell you something. First of all, they're both amazing. Secondly, I can't watch them ever again.
Because?
Well, you know, little Kim Richards grew up to be...
A Real Housewife.
A Real Housewife. And... when I see her being a Real Housewife, it kind of hurts me inside.
That's why I can't watch.
Because she seems really unhappy.
Because I saw No Deposit, No Return 3 times in the theater as a child.
Yeah.
And she was on Hello, Larry. I was a fan.
Summer Magic.
I don't know that one.
I don't either. I've never seen it. Hayley Mills.
Hmm.
Yeah. The Boatniks.
Yes.
This is terrific.
Still waiting for Disney Plus to pick up on that
one. He says, this is Disney's It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Kind of. When I once met Robert Morse at a screening.
Yeah.
Because he had like a teenage son who reviewed movies on YouTube or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, had to mention The Boatniks.
And what did he say when you said that?
He laughed.
You are...
Look, he hears about Mad Men to succeed in business.
I know.
You know, a Truman Capote from everybody.
You are the king of walking up to a famous person at an event and being like, I love you in obscure, weird, old movie, and having them go, oh!
It's my superpower.
You're also the king of outing me to Todd Haynes and Ed Asner. So
you weren't there.
I want you to be
Asner
quiet
thing,
forever.
So relax
from now on. Yeah. Number nine, the computer. Number eight, the computer wore tennis shoes.
Oh, yes, Dexter Riley.
Medfield College continues to cheat to win.
Indeed.
The Misadventures of Merlin Jones, which I have not seen.
That is it Tommy Kirk?
I don't know.
I know of it. I have not seen it. I think Annette Funicello's in it, too.
The North Avenue Irregulars.
Heck yeah.
He says, I love this movie. I realized I had married an amazing lady when she would break into Roll Out the Barrel whenever we were waiting in line or just for the hell of it. I could happily go on. I will leave it there. I remember most of the live actions more than some of the animation. We watched the VHS tapes... in those all-white clamshell cases that they had at the time. Best regards, Justin. Okay, so, the ones we haven't seen, you get a benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
One and only genuine original family band is bad. So, and everything else is perfect. So you're a 90% knife.
Absolutely.
Justin.
I do, and the Dexter Riley movies do give me an excuse to trot out my Joe Flynn impersonation. You know,
see here,
nah, see here, Riley.
You have a Joe Flynn impersonation.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
McHale.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, I forgot what I was going to say. I don't even know. We're done.
All right, we are done. Thank you all for listening. I'm so glad we had this time together. it might have time to fill right now. Maybe you don't, but if you do, once again, check out our friends on the internet. Go to the Critically Acclaimed Network and hear what Bibbs and Whitney are up to. Check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark. I recently appeared on another show on their network, on the Bramble Jam network, called History or His Story, which was a lot of fun. Check out all the Bramble Jam shows.
I listened to that episode while doing the dishes.
And?
Ain't bad.
Well, thank you.
I was especially into the story of the mummified corpse.
Yes.
That was fascinating.
It was discovered by the crew of the $6 Million Man. Find out if that was history or his story. They've got a lot of great shows. Justin Kirkland's been doing a really fun one called My Year with Dolly, where he goes chronologically year by year through Dolly Parton's career. I think he just dropped a special episode about the recently departed Kenny Rogers. Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the show, and it does help people find the show, so please do so. We would appreciate it. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, etc. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments or top 10 lists or what have you. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll be back next time with more. Until then,
goodbye.